long-term polling finds that the number of Americans who view patriotism as being very important has dropped a lot over the last 30 years. That's according to a series of surveys from the Wall Street Journal and the pollsters at NORC. And younger people are less likely than previous generations to describe themselves as patriotic. Our next guest says a big factor in that change is a big problem: people putting their partisan goals ahead of the country as a whole. With July 4th, just a week off, we want to hear your thoughts on patriotism. Join in now at 800-642-1234. What does patriotism mean to you? Do you consider yourself patriotic? Do you see people putting political party before national interest? If so, what could we do to fix that? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Rick Kite is director of the D.B. Reinhardt Institute for Ethics and Leadership at Viterbo University in La Crosse and co-host of the Ethical Life podcast. He wrote a piece about patriotism for the Wisconsin State Journal. Rick, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you, Rob. Good to be here.
Now, patriotism might mean different things to different people. Let's get a working definition. What are we talking about when we talk about patriotism?
I tend to think that patriotism is a conviction that we are all bound together and that we're bound together with a national identity. And it is also not just a recognition of that fact, but a celebration of it. This is a good thing that we are bound together in different kinds of groups, and national identity of one of them. So patriotism is like love of family, love of community. We've also got love of country. So it's one of the many ways in which we celebrate the kind of social identity that we have as human beings.
I mentioned that Wall Street Journal polling that you reference in your piece that I mentioned. Upwards of 70% of Americans said, hey, yeah, patriotism, very important, back in 1990. That's dropped to the 30-some percent. You know, a lot of people still say it's pretty important. What do you make of that drop?
Well, what I make of it is we are not as bound together at the local level, and then for that reason, when we think about national politics, we are thinking mostly about terms in terms of our friends and our enemies, and not thinking of ourselves as having a national identity, but having national interests that are essentially in competition, and I think that's a dangerous trend, and I think of people like my great uncle, who had fought in World War I and who had made a point to visit, I think, every president after FDR, something like that. When they would come through towns on trains, he would give the speeches, whether they're Democrat or Republican, because he just thought that was important for him to understand his responsibilities as a citizen. And so I think we have less appreciation for our responsibilities as citizens and kind of more attention to what we demand from the nation.
The core, I think, of your piece is this idea that you were starting to touch on, that we're starting to put our partisan identity and our partisan policy preferences ahead of that idea of shared identity. How did we get there? What do you think is driving that?
Well, I think it's lack of participation at the local level. And we have all this data now on each generation has fewer friends, fewer social interactions than the generation before. And that loss of social connection pretty much tracks with the decline in patriotism. And the way I think they're connected is when you have a lot of social connections at the local level, you regularly interact with people who disagree with you, but you find out they're not really that bad of people. You just disagree about some things. And so then you make the assumption nationally, well, most people are like that. I might disagree with them, but they're not really bad people. But when you don't have those kinds of diverse social connections at the local level, you start to think that the people who disagree with you actually are really bad people. And it's hard then to think of oneself as having a shared identity with them.
Talking to Rick Kite with Viterbo University in La Crosse, looking at what it means to be patriotic, why there's been a decline in the number of people who say patriotism is very important to them in polling here in the United States. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What does patriotism mean to you? Do you consider yourself patriotic? What would it take to bridge some of the partisan divides over big issues and over identity in the United States? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Rick, before we go to our callers, I want to quote from your piece in the State Journal here. We will never come to widespread agreement about many of the goals we seek for our nation. The best we can do is come to agreement about the means by which we pursue those goals. So I think that's super interesting, the idea of respecting the system and the process, even when we don't get the outcome we want. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, when you look at something like the Constitution, it sets forth kind of like what as Americans we consider to be broad goals, but then it specifies pretty precisely, you know, what the means are, what are the rules we have to follow, because of course we aren't going to all agree on all of the issues, all of the goals that we have, and so this understanding of like, well, how does government work? What are its limitations? What are the responsibilities of citizenship? These are all about process. They're all about means. And that's where we shape our kind of national unity. And especially, I mean, you can kind of do these kinds of calculations when you find out that we have such closely contested elections and the number of things that people have opinions on that they would like to see made either legal or illegal. It turns out that the majority of people are frustrated in their wishes the majority of the time. And so you can't have the expectation, I'll be happy once I get the majority of the things that I want, you know, as a partisan player. That's simply not going to happen. You have to say, okay, I'm going to be satisfied if at least we're all following the rules. And I think there's a path forward with that. I just don't think we're paying enough attention to it.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Julia is with us in Madison. Julia, hi.
Hi. I am, just to be upfront, a white middle-class American who was raised very much appreciating patriotism and small town, rural, growing up in parades, to honor veterans. And what I've come to see that the word patriotism has evolved into something that is an ideology that is different than it used to be, and I don't agree with. Patriotism was an African-American in the right before the World War II, standing on a track and field athlete, standing up and holding up his hand to be proud to be an American. And what we've done to quarterback Kaepernick is atrocious to me. He respectfully used his power, his position, to try to draw attention to something that he feels is important. And now he can't even do his job as an athlete. And I see him as a role model. I see him as someone that I would want my African-American children and everybody to look up to, because he used his position for speaking to something that was unfair. We've been based on slavery way too long, and we've never apologized. And even Germany has done that for its atrocities. And so,
Julia, I gotcha. Thanks for the call. Rick, your thoughts on Julia's views on our changes in what we think about patriotism?
Yeah, I think unfortunately that the word patriotism itself has become a partisan marker. And especially for many people who identify more as liberal or progressive, they kind of cringe at the word because it seems to be kind of owned by the right wing. I think that's unfortunate. I think it needs to be reclaimed by all Americans. I don't like this tendency of one party wanting to claim kind of the patriotic label, because then it becomes identified more with partisan goals rather than the process by which we shape our lives together. I also, I mean, I have mixed feelings about the Colin Kaepernick protest. I think I agree that he was really shabbily treated. I think it was unwise for him to choose to protest against the national anthem, perfectly within his rights, and we need to respect that. I mean, this is part of patriotism too, is respect people that don't agree with our national symbols. And it's certainly something that draws a great deal of attention, of course, which is why he did it. But I also think it's unfortunate. I think that's not a way that you, if you really want to bring attention to a widespread problem, that the only way it's going to get addressed is by addressing it together. You don't do it by making the national symbol itself the means of protest.
Julia, thanks for the call. Rick Kite stays with us from Viterbo University in La Crosse. We're looking at patriotism in divided times, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. When you think about people you disagree with politically, do you think there's common ground that you can agree on, meet on amid the debates? What does patriotism mean to you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We continue our talk about patriotism and the partisan divide with Rick Kite, director of the D.B. Reinhardt Institute for Ethics and Leadership at Viterbo University in La Crosse, co-host of the Ethical Life podcast. His piece from the Wisconsin State Journal on this topic is linked at WPR.org/Central Time. Let's go back to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Jason is with us in Madison. Jason, hi.
Hi, Rob. I called in because I've never actually considered myself all that much of a patriot until recently, when I find the system of American democracy is under attack, and suddenly I find myself compelled to defend it.
And do you think you've taken action, Jason? What kind of things have you done with this newfound idea of patriotism?
To be honest, I don't think I've done enough. I've proceeded with my civic duties as I have before, just a newfound sense of purpose and trying to convince the people I talk to that maybe they should find that purpose too.
Gotcha. Jason, thanks a lot for the call. Rick, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. I really think it's important to reclaim the idea of patriotism. I think it's and I think it's important to emphasize that it is not a matter of taking sides in the political debates. It's a matter of finding common ground, finding unity with our citizens so that we can work together to make life better for all of us. And I don't think that's a partisan issue. I think that's something most Americans would say, yeah, I agree with that. We should make life better. And we have to have some understanding of, like, we have a shared commitment in this project, and we want things to be better for the next generation. And so how do we do it? And so congratulations. That's great that you're considering yourself a patriot, because we need people that are part of this effort to reclaim the very idea.
Thanks for the call. Richard joins us now in Two Rivers. Richard, hi.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having me on the air. My question's kind of simple but complicated. It's why and when did we have such a disrespect for our presidents? I mean, I've never seen it more than flying two flags off the back of your pickup truck than I've seen now, and there's no discussion about it. Well, why and when did it happen?
Richard, thanks for the call. Rick, do you think we've gotten more willing to express our dissatisfaction, maybe even in vulgar terms, against our presidents? If so, why?
I'm not sure about that. When you go back in history, mm-hmm. you find a lot of contempt for various presidents. And we've had some real bad presidents. and you know, some presidents are fairly good at kind of unifying the nation, usually in times of some kind of national crisis. But I think what we've really lost is respect for the institution and the ability to distinguish the office from the individual. And that's part of the reason for that, I think, is the the gradual growth of executive power over the years, so that, you know, like most people really think that the president acts pretty much like a king and implements whatever kind of policies they want. And when you hear the, you know, the during the campaign time of the presidential candidates, you hear people talking about what will happen if their opponent gets elected, and they really seem to think they have pretty much unfettered power. And that's a problem, because the higher the stakes are, the higher the more the rhetoric ramps up and the more the emotion ramps up. And so part of toning down that public contempt for the person who holds office is understanding the limitations on their power. And I think also working harder to restore the power that should be held by both Congress and the courts.
Thanks for that call. And that seems like a danger here, Rick. If individuals are putting their party identity, their partisan goals first, it seems like there's often a lot of at least very vocal pressure on a president, on our guy, whichever side you're on our guy to push the rules, bend the rules, take more power in order to accomplish what I want them to do, and forget those institutional checks and balances that are there for a reason. Is that a worry for you?
That's a really significant worry. And I make the claim in the column that most people right now function as short-term consequentialists. And that is that they're focused on immediate results, and they tend to think that an action is right if it has good results. And that's not what, like, when I teach ethics, that's not the main part of ethics that I'm teaching. Ethics is mostly about the various kinds of constraints we place on ourselves and upon one another based on the certain types of actions. So we say, like, you shouldn't cheat, you shouldn't lie, you shouldn't steal. Not because those some things might not sometimes get you some good results. It's because of the type of action. And so we have to have more understanding in our nation of a kind of an allegiance, a commitment to the process of and so that's why that worries me. This, like, this pressure we have, I think, on our politicians to just get us the results we want, no matter how they do it.
I want to spend our last few minutes looking at possible solutions, Rick. And one thing you really are making the case for in your piece and here on the air is for people to get involved at the local level in politics. One hurdle there is, you know, you have to go to a place and it takes time to get involved. It can be a little boring to sit through public meetings sometimes versus the quick fix of, I'm going to make an angry comment on social media and that's my political participation. How do we get people to overcome that that convenience problem of involvement?
Yeah, it can be really boring, especially if one is only a casual participant. And so, like, the more you get involved, the more interesting it becomes, because you begin to know the players more, you form kind of relationships with them, and you understand the process and what's actually going on. But the first step is a really simple one. It's simply joining social groups, joining social organizations, and making a commitment to make it a part of your life. And what we've seen in America is a real growth in private life and a diminishment of social life. And so I don't think there's any way to recover patriotism without restoring a kind of robust social life. And that's where we start.
And then you've talked a lot today about, you know, seeing that political opponent as a fellow American, as not an enemy, but as, you know, maybe an adversary on these particular debates. I've had a lot of conversations on this show with people who try to bring together people from different points of view. Where do you see opportunities? Where do you see ways that we can get people from different backgrounds, different partisan views to embrace that shared American identity?
We begin by loving our neighbor. We begin by loving our actual neighbor, whether we like them or not. And then we extend it to our metaphorical neighbor, the person that maybe we see across the state or across the country. So that becomes a habit. But it starts really close to home.
And then where do we take it from there? We often now separate ourselves geographically, so we're more likely to agree with that neighbor. How do we move to that next step?
Move to the next step by working as hard as we can to sympathetically understand people. And the more we understand people's lives, the harder it is to hate them. And that goes to everybody. It goes, you know, to our real neighbor, but it also goes to the politician. And so try not to see people who represent us, say at the state level or the national level, just as these one or two dimensional figures, but as real human beings, and get to know something of their story.
Briefly, Rick, are you optimistic that we can do these things?
Yeah, I am. And I'm optimistic because I see within young people, I see a real desire for community. I think there's a lot of headwinds against them, but there's a real desire for community. And I think that's where our hope lies.
Rick, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Rick Kite, director of the D.B. Reinhardt Institute for Ethics and Leadership at Viterbo University in La Crosse, co-host of the Ethical Life podcast. We've got a link to his piece on patriotism. It appeared in the Wisconsin State Journal. Find that link at WPR.org/Central Time and keep sharing your thoughts on the meaning of patriotism. Email ideas@WPR.org.